Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Well, we hope you all had a great weekend, and we're going to be opening today with Ed Barrena giving us a recap of that exciting Super Bowl game that's one for the history books. Then we'll tell you about a new grand jury report and why the grand jury thinks San Diego's city council members should not be voting on their own salaries, and the answer just may surprise you. On our Crime Beat report, hear the verdict in the trial of a paroled predator accused of sexually assaulting women in Hukumba, and why his case raises doubts about the effectiveness of those electronic monitoring devices for parolees. We'll also have news about an arrest made following a threat against a local Islamic group. On our Capitol report, we'll tell you about a bill to help prevent veteran suicides. We'll also have news today about some near misses involving airplanes and drones, and what actions are being taken to protect public safety. There is some good news for literary fans this week, and we'll have details about a long-lost manuscript that's just been discovered. It's for a second book by Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Harper Lee, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird. Plus, we'll have news about some upgrades coming to the airport out in Hukumba Hot Springs. Our newsmaker interview today is with poet Jim Moreno, who will be telling us about a Valentine's weekend poetry campout at Kumeyaay Campground in Mission Trails Regional Park, and what's on the schedule that aspiring poets and romantics at heart should love. Hear about some new Feeling Fit clubs for seniors that the county is offering in East County and other locations now. And then in the second half of our show, we'll bring you the latest breaking national news from Public News Service. On Bookshelf, we'll be replaying Raina Menashe's interview with Zore Garamani, author of Sky of Red Poppies. And then we'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower out in Hukumba Hot Springs. On our health report, hear about the first pediatric heart transplant in San Diego County. We'll also be re-airing our interview with La Mesa Chamber of Commerce President Mary England about the Chamber's upcoming Salute to Local Heroes. This year, it's a cabaret-themed event to honor some brave firefighters, police, and others for their heroic actions. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.
America's most watched television event in history took place last Sunday as Super Bowl 49 was played in Phoenix, Arizona. Tom Brady and the New England Patriots looked to dethrone the Seattle Seahawks from their status as champions. With Seattle fielding most of the same players that had won the previous Super Bowl in a lopsided victory over the Denver Broncos, New England had their work cut out for them. Recent allegations against the Patriots regarding underinflated footballs during New England's previous playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts served as a major focus of the media hype surrounding this year's Super Bowl. New England head coach Bill Belichick and quarterback Tom Brady had denied any knowledge of the issue of footballs being inflated below league standards, which conceivably would make throwing a ball easier in cold temperatures. As a result, there was extra scrutiny placed on football security during the Super Bowl, although it was played in Arizona inside a climate-controlled stadium. Despite the so-called Deflategate controversy, the Patriots looked poised on offense and were able to score early. However, the Seahawks responded and held on to a healthy lead for most of the game, largely relying on the powerful running of enigmatic player Marshawn Lynch. Lynch had refused to talk to media during the season, including some awkward press appearances at the Super Bowl media events, but otherwise the Seahawks had managed to avoid controversy leading up to the big game. They did manage to create a stir with some on-field antics during the Super Bowl, however, including a penalty for scuffling with Patriots players late in the game, as well as a penalty for a touchdown celebration that most would agree was highly inappropriate and thankfully was not broadcast by NBC. The Patriots were able to rally late and took a 4-point lead into the final minutes of the game, thanks in great part to their receiver Julian Edelman, who appeared to suffer a concussion during the course of the game. He was visibly shaken, however remained on field until the final whistle. The fact that Edelman was able to continue without being led to the locker room for further examination raised some serious questions regarding head injuries, which were largely dismissed by coaches and players during post-game interviews, including Edelman himself, who ended up with 109 yards and the game's winning touchdown. The conclusion of the game featured two of the most fantastic catches in Super Bowl history, one by each team. The Seahawks' Jermaine Kearse had a first down catch within the 5-yard line that was bobbled and bounced off the receiver's body but never touched the ground. He managed to catch the football while lying on his back before rising to his feet and being pushed out of bounds, and after the referees reviewed and confirmed the 33-yard catch, it seemed the Seahawks were in position for a sure victory. However, fate is often unpredictable in the Super Bowl, as Seattle inexplicably called a pass to the middle of the field on second and goal, which was intercepted by undrafted Patriots rookie Malcolm Butler. The rookie corner darted on the ball and knocked the intended receiver away as he made a phenomenal play. Seahawks fans were mortified and upset that the ball was not handed to Marshawn Lynch, who had accumulated over 100 yards and a touchdown during the game. The last-minute interception by a relatively unknown player enabled the Patriots to hang on to the ball until the clock expired, and the Seahawks were bumped out of the champion's throne in one of the zaniest endings to a Super Bowl that anyone can remember. Tom Brady was awarded the MVP trophy for his performance, which included a record for most completions in a Super Bowl with 37 completed passes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The San Diego County Grand Jury has issued a report on compensation of city officials. The grand jury found that the process mandated by San Diego's city charter for setting the salary for the mayor and city council members is fundamentally flawed. Once every 2 years, a citizens group, the Salary Setting Commission, recommends an appropriate salary for the mayor and members of the city council. Council members must then vote to accept, reduce, or reject that recommendation. But the grand jury suggests that the process creates a conflict of interest, or at least the appearance of one, by requiring council members to vote for their own compensation. As a result, it turns out, council members are reluctant to vote themselves a salary increase and risk the wrath of voters. Since July 1, 2003, they have not had an increase, while the cost of living has gone up by more than 25%. The grand jury recommends an amendment to the city charter by which salaries of the mayor and council members would be determined by an external benchmark. The report does not recommend that a specific benchmark be adopted, but it does cite two examples, linkage to salaries of superior court judges set by the state legislature and linkage to the Consumer Price Index published by the Federal Bureau of Labor Standards. The San Diego County Board of Supervisors and the City of Los Angeles use the former, while the City of Long Beach employs the latter method. The report recommends that the newly created Charter Review Committee fully vet a new process for setting mayoral and councilmember salaries and place the required charter amendment on the ballot in June or November of 2016. The new process would take effect on July 1, 2017, if it is approved by the voters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Crime Beat Report. A sexually violent predator has been convicted of sexual assault and battery involving two women in Hakumba, according to the Alpine Sun. Channel 10 reports that John Wilson Kreitzer had been released from a state hospital and, according to the Sheriff's Department, was wearing an ankle bracelet at the time of the assault. The crimes raise serious questions about just how effective or ineffective the monitoring devices are in protecting neighbors of paroled predators. The elderly woman told authorities that Kreitzer walked into her home and began kissing and fondling her last July. A second woman came forward and said she had also been assaulted by Kreitzer, who she said followed her home from a store. Kreitzer was convicted on sexual battery and simple assault, but was acquitted on other charges of assault with intent to commit rape and burglary. The 68-year-old parolee could face 25 years to life in prison due to his prior record, which includes forcible rape and lewd conduct with a child. He had recently been registered as a transient and has lived in Lemon Grove and downtown San Diego. You've been listening to East County Magazine on KNSJ.
San Diego police have arrested John David Weisinger, aged 53, of La Mesa for making a criminal threat against the Council on American-Islamic Relations. He is also charged with illegally owning, buying, or selling an illegal large-capacity ammunition magazine. Weisinger allegedly phoned the organization's San Diego chapter in Kearny Mesa, according to the statement issued by Executive Director Hanif Mohebi. In the statement, Mohebi said, "We hope this arrest sends a clear message that targeting Americans based on their faith or their civic participation will not be tolerated." This is not the first threat received by the Islamic advocacy group. UT San Diego reports that in October, the San Diego chapter notified the FBI that it had received a letter referring to a death sentence along with a bag of unknown substance mailed to the office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. It's rare for members of Congress to agree on anything these days, but both the House and Senate voted unanimously to approve the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act. The measure now heads to President Obama's desk for signature. The bill is named after a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars who took his own life. He was one of over 8,000 veterans who commit suicide every year. The measure calls for external audits of suicide prevention programs in the Departments of Veterans Affairs and Defense to find out which ones are succeeding and which should be scrapped. In addition, it will establish a website on mental health services for veterans. The bill will also create a pilot program to repay student loan debt for students in psychiatric medicine who agree to work at the VA. The cost of the bill is $24 million, and legislators did voice differences on whether those costs should be offset or if funds should come from VA funds already allocated, the Hill reports. The measure is expected to help address issues of traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, which have contributed to the high rate of suicides among returning veterans. Clay Hunt's mother, Susan Selke, issued a statement thanking the Senate for passing the bill. "While we are a little bittersweet, because it is too late for our son Clay," she concluded, "we are thankful knowing that this bill will save many lives."
The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is reporting approximately 200 close calls in the past year between aircraft and drones. That includes two cases of drones flying too close to airport runways in San Diego County, one in East County near Gillespie Field in El Cajon, and a second in Carlsbad. Now, one San Diego drone maker and seller has devised technology to help solve that problem, 10 News reports. EasyDrone has devised software called geofencing technology. Using GPS, it maps a circle around airports and will disable drones that cross the line to prevent them from endangering planes. The FAA is issuing warnings to offenders while it finalizes new rules that should be in place by year's end. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer has called on the FAA to crack down on drones after two near misses at Kennedy International Airport in New York and another New York airport where a flight carrying President Barack Obama had recently landed. Senator Schumer called the near misses scary and likened the situation to the Wild West, adding, "It must stop." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
To Kill a Mockingbird, Harper Lee's powerful novel addressing racial inequality, won the Pulitzer Prize soon after it was published in 1960 and has become an American literary classic. The story was told through the point of view of Scout, the young daughter of Atticus Finch, a lawyer who defends a black man charged with raping a white woman. But now it turns out that Harper Lee wrote a sequel titled Go See a Watchman, written back in the 1950s before To Kill a Mockingbird was ever published. Harper thought the manuscript was lost, but recently her friend, attorney Tanya Carter, discovered it, and the novel is set for publication in July of this year. The sequel features Scout as an adult woman, returning to Macomb, Alabama, to visit her father. According to an announcement from Harper's publisher, Scout is forced to grapple with issues both personal and political as she tries to understand her father's attitude toward society and her own feelings about the place where she was born and spent her childhood. The author, Harper Lee, received a Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2007, and she is now 88 years old. She says she was surprised and delighted to learn that her manuscript survived, and she said it was her editor who read flashbacks to Scout's childhood in Go See a Watchman and then persuaded Harper Lee to write a full novel from Scout's girlhood perspective. So To Kill a Mockingbird was born, Associated Press reports. The new book will be available in both print and electronic editions. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
California has approved funding for improvements at the airport in Jacumba Hot Springs. The state authorization comes in response to the county authorizing a copay with the state back in 2012 to pave the runway and make other upgrades. On March 18th, the county's Public Works Department will ask supervisors to award the construction project and authorize advertising, says Michael Curry, project manager with the department. Howard Cook, former chair of the Hucumbah Sponsor Group, the planning body for the Hucumbah region, calls the airport rehabilitation a major revitalization project for the community. The existing runway surface is decomposed granite. The project will include runway rehabilitation and paving, as well as grading and drainage improvements, upgrades that Khoury says will enhance services to the flying public. Construction is estimated to begin in June 2016, with completion anticipated in September of 2016. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is poet Jim Moreno, who's going to be telling us about the Kumeyaay Lake Poetry Campout on Valentine's weekend at Mission Trails Regional Park. Jim, welcome to the show.
It's nice to be with you, Miriam.
Now, Jim is a very illustrious poet. He is on the advisory board of the Poetic Medicine Institute of Palo Alto. He is the California and regional editor of San Diego Poetry Annual and a teaching artist with Young Audiences of San Diego and the Point Loma Arts Academy. Jim was also the resident poet for the juvenile court and community schools and an original member of the Langston Hughes Poetry Circle. He is the author of the book Dancing in Descent, as well as two CDs of music and poetry. Jim Moreno also hosts the second Tuesday Jimmy's Poetry at the Cafe Cabaret on Adams Avenue, and he's in post-production for a new radio show coming up soon called The Poetry Cafe, to be aired right here on KNSJ 89.1 FM. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about the Kumeyaay Lake Poetry Campout. How did this all come about?
Very wonderful man named Jay Wilson, who's the CEO of the Mission Trails Regional Park.
Yeah, with the Park Foundation.
I approached him at a fundraiser for our station, for KNSJ, and I just said, after listening to him talk about what was available at the park, I just had an inspiration to combine a poetry camp out with the services that are already there. And he's such a good man. He talked to me for an hour during this fundraiser, and we hatched this plan together of a three-day poetry campout with four poetry workshops, including a tour of the park and stargazing with the San Diego Astronomy Association.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful setting for something like this. Now, the dates of this are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, February 13th, 14th, and 15th. Can you tell us what happens each of those days? Let's start with Friday night.
Yes, and most important part about the weekend is it's Valentine's Day weekend, so it is a weekend of love.
Ah.
And so each of the workshop, we have a different focus on love. And so Friday, everyone checks in to the campground at 5, Kumeyaay Lake Campground. And then we have a poetry workshop on the love of writing.
Sounds very romantic, whether you are a poet or a partner of a poet.
And then if we can finish up on time, we'll go up to just a little bit farther away from where we're riding, and the San Diego Astronomy Association is doing stargazing.
Ooh.
And so we'll be able to do that with them, and that makes a pretty full evening. Saturday morning, there's a tour of the park, and people need to know this is one of the largest city parks in the nation, 5,000 acres, I think 53.
Yeah, I believe it's over 6,000. They've just actually added to it and enhanced it.
Mm-hmm. Really big park. And so a ranger will take people on a tour. We'll come back from that tour and we'll do a workshop on the love of nature.
Beautiful.
We'll break for lunch, and then in the afternoon we'll do an Eros poetry workshop, our love for someone else. And I leave it open for people if they've lost someone that's been a love person for them and they want to write a grief poem, they can do that. If they are anticipating meeting someone, they can do about that. But if they're in a relationship with someone, especially a long-term relationship, it's important to also note that this is a workshop the weekend for beginning poets or seasoned poets.
There you go.
And my experience as a teacher is the beginning poets get something from the seasoned poets, even poets that are published. But the published poets, they get to see, they get to remember when they were new.
Yeah.
And the freshness that they had, maybe not rehearsed yet, but a freshness that they have that they no longer have because they're seasoned. And there's a nice complement between the two.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that at writing conferences for writers of all sorts.
You've been teaching a long time yourself, so you know what I'm saying is true. And then after that workshop, we're going to break for dinner. And then, there'll be at sunset, there'll be an open mic at the Kimwe'ai Lake Amphitheater.
I understand that the evening event at the amphitheater is also open to the public if they want to come hear some very talented poets and poets in training.
That's correct. And it's open to musicians who have original songs that they like to play. We can't do covers because of my contract with the city, but we invite any musicians that want to come to the open mic and maybe back up a poet. Or do original songs.
Very nice. That sounds like just a lovely evening. And folks, if you're looking for what to do on Valentine's Day, that sounds like it might be a good choice. What happens on Sunday?
Sunday is very special for me. When I lived on Paula Reservation, I lived there for 5 years. And I began to get involved with Native American arts and crafts. And so a teacher, she was Kumeyaay, a Kumeyaay lady from Manzanita Reservation, taught me how to make dream catchers. So we'll actually Sunday morning, we'll be making dream catchers. And when we're finished with those, we'll actually have a dream catcher with a willow hoop, artificial line that makes the web on the dream catcher, a spirit bead and feathers.
Mm-hmm.
They'll actually have one of those made, and then we'll write a poem about the dreams that we want to catch in our lives as a form of self-love.
Beautiful. That just sounds like a wonderful experience. Now, for people who want to get more information, there is, by the way, a fee for signing up for the workshop. If people want to get more information or make a reservation, since it's limited, I understand, to only 12 lucky people, where can they go, Jim?
There's the Mission Trails website.
Which is mtrp.org.
They can go there and they can find out about the price, and they can also go to the link that helps them register.
Very good. And we also have that information up on the calendar at eastcountymagazine.org. Jim, it sounds like a wonderful way to spend Valentine's weekend. I'm wondering if we could close today by asking you if you would please share one of your wonderful poems with us.
I'd be happy to, Miriam. Thank you for asking. This is a poem that was written in the spring of 1994 after I had a dream. And that's another thing I neglected to say. On Sunday morning, if people have a dream that has mystified them or inspired them or frightened them, that's an opportunity to write about that dream as well.
Very nice.
This is called El Regalo del Arbol, The Gift of the Tree, in honor of Pablo Neruda. Pablo spoke of branches in the night. Branches found me in a dream, white gown Chippewa princess floating above Mother Earth waving goodbye. Branches lay wise, loving, wooden fingers on my chest, lightly touching, lightly loving, soothing, as had the woman. Branches penetrated my chest, searching, finding, gently holding, healing my wounded heart. Dream gift of medicine man. When poetry finds me, I am always alone, sitting, watching like eagle in deep blue sky mountain nest. When images, paintings, portraits of my mind find me, I am waist deep in snow melt river water, washing, rushing by with wet blue lip whispering words, soothing sounding liquid beauty, tears welling, rising, blessing peace. Above me, winged ones singing joyful feather songs. When poetry arrives, companioned by grandfather wind, caressing my tired mind with grandfather love, grandpa tenderness. I hear words surfacing from some ancient sacred place, sounding sometimes hot, like a forest ablaze with heat and thunder, sounding sometimes gentle, like a child's sleepy bedtime prayer. Sometimes muse summons by shadows drifting lazily, cloud shadows wafting on windows of passing cars, like phantom horses floating down sand dunes from Pharaoh's past. Pablo might say, I am summoned by branches of the night. Mi corazón es muy fuerte, porque son las palabras en mi corazón y el toque de las ramas en mis sueños. My heart is very strong because of the words in my heart and the touch of the branches in my dreams.
Beautiful. You do such a marvelous job of just painting words, painting images with words, Jim. Thank you so much for sharing that with our listeners on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. And listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking with the poet Jim Moreno about the upcoming Valentine's Day weekend Kumeyaay Lake Poetry Campout at Mission Trails Regional Park. Jim, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam, and best of luck with your show, too.
Well, thank you.
San Diego County's older adults have new opportunities to stretch, lift weights, and help maintain an active lifestyle as the county's popular Feeling Fit Club expands with new locations in East County. The Rancho San Diego Library will offer Feeling Fit classes on Mondays and Wednesdays from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. In addition, the El Cajon Salvation Army will hold classes on Monday and Wednesdays from 10 until 11 a.m. Countywide Feeling Fit clubs are now held in 31 locations. The clubs are functional fitness classes for older adults designed to strengthen major muscle groups, highlighting the exercise and socialization components of wellness. The classes are 1 hour long, 2 to 3 times a week. According to the county, Feeling Fit clubs offer a safe, comfortable environment for older adults to develop and maintain their level of physical fitness while also engaging in social interaction and self-esteem building. The classes aim to improve the ability of older adults to maintain their independence. An hour-long Feeling Fit club program can also be viewed at 8 a.m. and again at 1 p.m. Monday through Friday on the San Diego County News Center TV or CNCT. TV. For more information on Feeling Fit clubs, you can call 858-495-5998. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. In the second half of our show today, we'll lead off with some national breaking news from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. I'm Troy Wild. We're covering stories from coast to coast, including congressional Republicans pass legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The U.S. Senate unanimously approves legislation that addresses veteran suicide. And a new report finds similarities between auto lending and the mortgage market before the meltdown. And now our top story.
This is a waste of our time. This is an insult to the American people.
That's Democratic Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts speaking during debate in Congress yesterday, just before the Republican-controlled House approved legislation to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The vote is largely symbolic because President Obama has vowed to veto any bill that would seek to undo what some people call Obamacare. Republicans call it a failed law, but McGovern says it has helped 3 million young adults gain coverage through a parent's plan, saved seniors $11 billion on prescription drugs, ended the pre-existing condition, as well as lifetime limits and caps on coverage. He says growth in healthcare spending in the U.S. is the slowest on record, while healthcare price inflation is at its lowest rate in a half century. However, Republicans like Congressman Dan Benishek of Michigan, who is also a medical doctor, insist that the Affordable Care Act is hurting rather than helping Americans.
This is not bringing more health care to the American people. This is bringing less health care to the American people. They have less access to care now than they have had in the past.
Meanwhile, in a rare show of unity, the U.S. Senate unanimously approved the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act. It provides funding to evaluate the mental health and suicide prevention programs of the VA and the Defense Department, improve training, and enhance collaboration. Jace Elliston, a Gulf War veteran who lives with post-traumatic stress disorder, says almost 24 vets take their own lives every day.
It's a massive problem. 22 a day is unconscionable. It's got to be changed, and anything that we can do to make it better and a review of the systems that we have in place is probably a great idea.
Elliston points out the numbers total about 8,000 veteran suicides per year. The legislation is named for a Marine veteran who struggled with PTSD and committed suicide in 2011 at age 28. Similarities have been found in auto lending that look an awful lot like what happened in the mortgage market prior to the meltdown. Those trends are featured in a new report from the Center for Responsible Lending. The center's Chris Kukla explains there are several issues at play. Cars are more expensive and wages are stagnant. Plus, he says dealers are rewarded for issuing loans at higher rates despite what the borrower qualifies for, and they can keep those details secret.
You're already underwater by 40% to half the minute you drive off the lot, but you've also got a depreciating asset. Most people, they're going to be underwater the entire time that they're in the loan.
Kukla contends the practices are not only dangerous to family economic health, but they hurt car dealers as well because consumers upside down in long-term loans are not repeat customers. Health is a bright spot for children in a new report that looks at how kids are faring 5 years since the Great Recession was declared over. The first focus analysis found that more children have health coverage, but the housing crisis has not abated for many low-income families. Deborah Smith has the story.
The group's family economics expert, Carrie Baldari, says it's estimated that 1.3 million schoolchildren are experiencing homelessness, and 4 in 10 live in housing situations where parents struggle to pay rent.
Still nowhere in America where a parent is working minimum wage of 40 hours a week can afford rent.
The report recommends more affordable housing construction and additional federal rental assistance vouchers. Baldari says the supply is limited and only about 1/4 of people eligible for vouchers receive them.
President Obama revealed his proposed federal budget this week, and the same thing is happening in several states with legislatures now in session. In Nevada, Republican Governor Brian Sandoval is proposing a nearly $900 million education funding increase. In his State of the State address, Sandoval pointed out that Nevada has the nation's lowest high school graduation rate, as well as the lowest preschool attendance rate in the country. He said improving those kinds of statistics requires investment now.
It's no mystery. Nevada's new companies will need a highly skilled workforce. Improving our public education system must therefore begin with modernization, and modernization requires investment.
Governor Sandoval's plan would generate new revenue by increasing the state's business license fee from a flat $200 for some businesses, and for others, change it to a percentage of revenues based on specific industries. We head to Tennessee, where today at least 300 people living with a disability and their advocates will converge at the state capitol for Disability Day. Stephanie Carson has more on the issues they'll be discussing.
They'll be discussing the impact of disability on their lives and policies such as Governor Bill Haslam's recently released Ensure Tennessee plan that will accept federal dollars and offer health plans to an estimated 200,000 uninsured people. Many of those are people living with a disability, explains Melanie Bull with the Tennessee Disability Coalition.
It becomes a lot more relevant as you age. You're more likely to have a disability. An accident can happen. We're all one trip and fall away from having a disability.
Today's event includes representatives from at least 26 different disability advocacy groups.
We head to Minnesota, where this is Hunger Day on the Hill, and where 1 in 10 people are not certain where their next meal will come from. Today, state leaders and legislators are expected to share their recipes for reducing food insecurity. Colleen Moriarty with Hunger Solutions Minnesota says one key will be expanding universal school breakfast to cover not only kindergartners, but also to cover children up to third grade. I'm Troy Wild for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Zore Garamani. My guest is the author of the novels The Moon Daughter, Sky of Red Poppies, which was translated into French and Persian, and The Commiserator, which is in Persian. Her work has received awards from the California Stories, KPBS One Book, One San Diego, and San Diego Book Awards. In addition, she has participated in a number of anthologies, including Tremors, New Fiction by Iranian American Writers, A Year in Ink, and The Poetry of Iranian Women. Welcome, Dr. Garamani. It's a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you, and please call me Zoe.
Okay, welcome, Zoe. Let's start with your new novel, The Moon Daughter. Give us a little teaser about this book, what motivated you to write it.
My first book, which you spoke of, had answered a lot of social, maybe some political questions, and altogether it was a glimpse into the past 40 years of Iran. So its success, surprising and thrilling as it was, would not guarantee that people necessarily like my writing. So obviously I was nervous about my second book because this one is purely fiction.
Sure.
But I will always want to write what I know more than other people know about, or what we say that in writing is, you know, write what you know best. And what I know best will always have a touch of Persian culture in it, because it was Iran where I was born and raised, and even though I have lived 40 years here, mm-hmm. my Iranian-ness will always be there, as you can hear it in my voice and accent. So this book is about a mother and a daughter. I always give my books a universal theme so readers of all walks of life can find something to relate to. And I wrote about an immigrant mother who, mm-hmm. her story is the first part of the book, and it's told in third person. And then I flip the coin and tell the rest of the story from the daughter's point of view, who is a lawyer, American raised, and very much an American.
Right.
So in that way, I have achieved two goals. One is to introduce part of the culture and the cultural differences, and also to bring it full circle to a resolution of what may or may not happen to immigrant families. And it is a universal story in that, in this story, the woman is Iranian, but we are a society of mixed cultures. And often that mixed culture presents a problem between parents and their
yes.
children.
Yes.
So that story is touched on. And it's about women's rights in the Middle East.
You know, those really are universal themes, aren't they?
Exactly.
Your award-winning novel, Sky of Red Poppies, is about two girls coming of age in Iran during the 60s. Talk a little bit about the social differences in Iran that you shared through your book.
For those who are familiar with the book, they know I have tried to make my pen into a camera and go back to 40 years of life there. And like every society, there are many differences culturally, not so much cultural, but economically, religiously, politically. There are differences. Yet one thing that we all shared was that we went to an all-girls school where you were required to wear a denim uniform. Mm-hmm. And once everybody wears that uniform, those social classes are masked.
Right.
It was only after school where these two friends show how different they are. One comes from a fundamental religious family. She's an activist. She's an intellectual. And the other one is an ordinary girl like I am, who just gets educated and her family is well-to-do and they can send her abroad and she ends up abroad and never gets involved in anything. So then the one who is not involved tells the story of the one who was involved. And then it comes again full circle after 40 years into the story of a friendship and its redeeming powers.
Sounds like very optimistic themes.
I never lose hope. And even though there are sad parts of it, there's always hope.
Well, I know, obviously, immigration and the experiences, the generational changes, and friendship are big themes for you. I guess that's why you've been called the voice of the Iranian American diaspora. What does that phrase mean to you, and how does it drive your work?
I'm glad to hear this. I had never heard people call me that.
I read it.
I have heard many other voices who are much stronger voices in diaspora, but maybe I am the naive voice in diaspora because I have never been involved in any activities. I've never had a clear political view. But I believe that this country is, rather than being a melting pot, it is a collage. Nobody really melts.
Right.
People keep their identities and come together in the most beautiful way and create a society that is unique. Each person brings their good traits into it and tries to shed the traits that are not so desirable. And that makes us a better society. So my gift, my 2 cents worth of this being part of this collage and being for the past 40 years included in this beautiful society, my gift to it is to represent my culture in the best way that I know.
And how have you changed during this process, this 40-year process? I mean, how is your cultural beliefs or your identity changed?
When I moved here in 75, I knew it was for good. That was years before any revolution had happened in Iran, years before restrictions were imposed on women. And I had to sit down and think, if this is where I am going to live for the rest of my life, I might as well blend in with the society. So I accepted the American culture right from day one.
Wow.
And never argued. I bragged about the fact that I make one of the best apple pies you could taste. Rather than force my own culture on my children, I raised 3 of the best Americans I know, and they each in their own field are an asset to their society. And 2 of them don't even understand or speak a word of Persian, but that is not their duty to do. If they want to do it, they can always do it, and I'll be happy to help them. But that is my language, my culture, and they can only pick it up if they want to. I will not push it at them.
Is there anything that you miss the most about your culture?
There's a lot. There's, above everything else, the unconditional love that I received while I lived in Iran, and I will never receive it anywhere else. And I have friends of all walks of society, but sometimes when it's put to test, I see that we Iranians are a bit crazy about friendship. We just go that extra mile. And I miss being surrounded by people who would go that extra mile. I do miss being recognized, being known in my mm-hmm. small town.
It's having a smaller society.
Exactly. Well, even if it's not small, once you do something good, you're a good student or you're a good writer, you become known by people.
Okay.
Here, everybody is living their own lives and it's more private.
The individualism.
Individualism. I don't even know some of my neighbors, and I've lived on the same dead-end street for 14 years. So if this was back in Iran, I would have been friends with most of them. We would know each other maybe by first name, you know. And I do have very good neighbors that I do know. I'm not saying that everyone is like that. But that intimacy is what I miss the most. And the emotional, poetic way that they speak from day to day, even on an everyday, even an illiterate person knows hundreds of verses by heart. That I miss very much.
Interesting. So that brings me to my next question, which is about the Iranian-American community in San Diego. Is there a strong community as such, and how do you participate in it?
There's a very strong community. I believe the last someone told me there are 68,000 Iranian-Americans in San Diego. And there are many wonderful organizations. There's the Persian Cultural Center. There's the House of Iran in Balboa mm-hmm. Park. There's the Association of Iranian Professionals, numerous societies. And while I am a member of some of those and help here and there when I am asked to help, I am not 100% active in any of those because I have so many other volunteer works. I am much more diligent about being a friend of the Central Library than I am as a member of the PCC. So I do consider this my general big society, my big community, rather than focus on a smaller group just because we came from the same country.
I understand. Let's move to Sky of Red Poppies, which I know is on the reading list of many high schools and colleges. You've also had hundreds of articles and short stories appearing in U.S. and foreign publications. You've been successful. To what do you attribute your success, and do you have any advice for all those scribblers out there listening?
Yes. I, first of all, it is true that luck has a lot to do with it. I owe my success to the San Diego readers. Mm. I could have published this book while I lived in Chicago, and none of this may have happened. There's a certain warmth and certain thirst for culture and knowing more among San Diegans that I've never seen anywhere else.
Really?
And I also was lucky that mm-hmm. apparently my book, as soon as it came out, fell in the right hands and was represented right. by the right readers. So a lot of it has to do with luck. I'm not going to, even after 3 years, I am not going to let it get into my head to say, hey, here I am, the great writer they discovered. No, here I am, the lucky writer who was discovered. And I do hope more and more of my colleagues will be discovered in the same way, and I wish them well. But my advice would be never give up. Never, ever give up, because you're the one who brings the success about.
That's wonderful advice. Just one brief question to finish up. What are you writing next?
My next novel is titled The Basement. When I wrote Sky of Red Poppies, people asked me if there was a sequel to it. And I said no, because that story ended. It's that duration of time when major changes happen. And then I read The Help, which is about the domestic help. And I thought, oh my God, is there a story about the domestic help in Iran? Oh. So this, I play with the word basement, because not only did the staff live in the basement of the house, but they were the foundation of the many of the changes to come. So the word basement appealed to me. And in there, you will meet a lot of the characters that you have already met. in right. Sky of Red Pines.
And when will this book come out?
I hope by the end of the year, but you know how it is.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to it. Time is up, Zoe, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad to tell you that the blurb that East County Magazine wrote, something that East County Magazine wrote in their review, Dennis Moore wrote that, now appears on the back cover of the French edition of my book.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank you again. And for more information on Zoe Garamani and her work, please visit her website at www.zoegaramani.com. And let me spell that. It's Zoegahremani. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report. San Diego's first pediatric heart transplant patient was released from Rady's Children's Hospital Tuesday. This is following a 12-day stay and a successful surgery. The child's name is Eric Montaño. He's an 11-year-old boy who was diagnosed with restrictive cardiomyopathy, which stopped his heart from properly filling with blood. Eric has been on a waiting list from August until January 14th when the surgery was performed. The doctors say he has a good chance of surviving for at least 20 to 30 more years now that the transplant has proven successful, KPBS reports. Eric also has a twin brother, Raul, who is currently still on the waiting list for a transplant of his own. Pediatric procedures of this kind are incredibly rare, with only 500 worldwide each year. San Diego now has the capacity to perform the operation. Before, a patient requiring a transplant of this kind would have had to travel all the way to Los Angeles or San Francisco.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And my very special guest today is Mary England, who is the president of the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. Mary, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. Now, I understand that you have a very special event coming up, the 7th Annual Salute to Local Heroes and Installation Dinner, also known as Come to the Cabaret this year. Tell us when and where that's going to be.
Well, I'd love to. We're going to, for the 7th year in a row, we're going to honor 7 local heroes, police, fire, paramedics, and our wonderful retired volunteer patrol, and it's going to be at the Town and Country Hotel, a chamber member, in the Golden Ballroom on Wednesday, February 18th.
Very good. From 5:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Yes, ma'am.
So the Salute to Heroes honors those people who work all year saving our lives and keeping us safe. Can you give us an example or two of the kinds of things that they're being honored for?
Well, these are the first responders, whether they're with American Medical Response, paramedics, or whether they're Heartland Fire and Rescue, or our own La Mesa Police Department. These are the people that are chosen by their organizations for going above and beyond, you know, the call of duty and saving lives.
Very good. And I understand you'll have details about the specific reasons why each of these heroes are being honored at the program that evening.
Yes, we will. And if I could, I'd love to at least list and let your listeners know who the heroes are this year.
Well, please do.
Okay. American Medical Response, our paramedics, our paramedic Cody Brackney and paramedic Kyle Granger. Heartland Fire and Rescue, our fire department, of course, is Captain Todd Nelson. La Mesa Police Department, Officer of the Year is Bill Wilson, and Employee of the Year is Maxine Lynch. And then, of course, we rounded out with our La Mesa PD retired senior volunteer patrol, who are those wonderful retired people that go out daily, tirelessly, volunteers to check on our seniors and help us with our events throughout the year. We will be honoring Barbara Burgess and Lorraine Shalby.
What other activities do you have planned for the evening, Mary?
Well, in addition to our heroes and installation of our board of directors, we have a silent auction and we have a raffle. So those are always quite popular with our attendees, and those start at 5:30 during the reception.
Very good. Marvelous. And I understand that these nominations are chosen by each of the organizations themselves.
Yes, that's true. We send them a letter at the end of the year, let them know the date of our event the following year, and ask them to please give us their selections.
Very good. Now, in addition to honoring these local heroes, it also sounds like a really fun event, quite a soiree. I see that it's evening attire, business cocktail, or cabaret glam.
Yes, we're going out on the cabaret theme. Everything will be black and red. Mm-hmm. Cabaret, we have a specialty entertainer that is a cabaret singer. Devlin will be entertaining that night. And, of course, we have themed our menu after the popular movie and Broadway play, which is still running in New York, the cabaret.
Tempt us a little. Tell us what's on the menu.
Well, if you're hungry or if you're not, we're going to have All That Jazz Green Valley Salad. We're going to have the Kit Kat Club Chicken Breast with Roasted Rosemary Red Potatoes, Vegetables, and our specialty cabaret desserts are designed by Teresa Johnson, owner of Grove Pastry Shop and Custom Cakes. And if you know Miriam, how wonderful she makes desserts. This one's special.
You know, I do. They've been around a long time. I had my wedding cake made there many, many years ago.
Oh, I didn't know they were around that long. That's a good thing.
Yes. And actually, I think they've been there 50 years or
yes,
so. So that even predates that.
Teresa's been in that location for 5 to 7 years, I believe. And we're adding this year, first time, we're featuring a specialty drink that evening, and we're calling it a Cabaret Cosmo.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a very exciting evening. And again, listeners, if you just tuned in, we're talking about the Salute to Local Heroes and Installation Dinner Come to the Cabaret being put on by the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday, February 18th. At the Town and Country Hotel's Golden Ballroom, and we're speaking with Mary England, the president of the La Mesa Chamber. Now, Mary, if people want to get more information or tickets, where can they get that?
Well, we'd love to direct them to our website, which is lamesachamber.com, and they can certainly look on there and see all the information. And they can also call us if they have any particular questions at 619-465-7700.
Very good. Well, I'm going to be there myself, and I'm
certainly looking forward to it. We look forward to entertaining you, Miriam.
We'll be writing up about all those wonderful heroes as well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mary, on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.